the love and the commitment and the emotion that you also put into your horses ends up being very similar in some ways. When you become an entrepreneur, you kind of start to take care of your business kind of like it's your baby, or it's, you know, your pet. It's, you know, something that you're also nurturing.
There is a depth and a breadth to our lives that largely goes unexplored. As an equestrian life mindset coach and host of this podcast, I am here to lead you on that exploration. Deep conversations covering topics in and out of the show ring with industry leaders and unsung heroes alike, sharing their stories and what makes their journey unique, but relatable at the same time. We all have stories to share and lessons to trade, something we've learned from a horse or from each other. So relax and be ready to listen with more than just your ears. I'm Tracy Mitchell. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride. Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to the Equestrian Elements Life Coaching podcast called Hitting Your Stride. Today I have with me a wonderful individual, a woman who had a vision and followed it through to reality. A woman who followed her passion and instinct and continues to not only develop her quickly growing business, but she also insists on keeping her own personal development at the forefront of her attention. I am happy to have with me Taylor Stafford, owner and founder of Anatomic Incorporated. Anatomic offers riders high quality, innovative sportswear for their horses. All of the products that Anatomic offers have been designed by Taylor herself, and it all started with her vision of solving the age-old problem every rider has struggled with, trying to find a good quality blanket that will fit their horse. Welcome, Taylor.
Hi, Tracy. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So, Taylor, you founded Anatomic in early 2018 and officially launched in March of 2020. Now, I know as soon as I said March of 2020, the majority of listeners, if not all, took a deep breath and got wide-eyed, because we all know what else happened at that time, a worldwide pandemic. We can touch on this a bit later in our conversation, but can you briefly share with us what that timing felt like to you?
For sure. So yeah, I think everyone, even the people that I've encountered directly, when I say, oh yeah, we launched, you know, March 2020, sometimes I try to soften the blow and I'll say, you know, spring 2020, but yeah, still not in any way an ideal time to be starting up a new business, a new brand. The original launch date was anticipated to be November 2019. But then as things do with business and production manufacturing, I've come to learn everything usually takes longer than you expect. So over the past year and a half since launching Anatomic, I've kind of changed the way that I viewed this, this launch date, right? Obviously in the beginning, when it happened, it was like, wow, great, Taylor. Like who would have seen this coming? This is awesome. Great job. Like what bad luck, right? And I was for sure a little like sour about it. And I really had to pivot and drastically kind of shift and change my original business model, which was going to be primarily going through tack stores, going to the horse shows, all of that kind of in-person connection. The social media side of things, the online sales to me, were kind of going to be more secondary. So obviously when COVID hit, I launched the business anyway, because that was 2.5 years in the making. I wasn't in a position to delay that any further. I definitely had to pivot and really force myself, which it wasn't something at the time that I was comfortable with, but I really had to force myself to show up on social media. I really started focusing more on Instagram. And this is where my perspective has shifted on this, because I think now in hindsight, this was a good thing, because I think COVID forced a lot of people to start shopping more online than they previously did. And it also normalized online shopping and discovering new brands, the new products online a lot more. So I think in hindsight, it definitely wasn't all bad. And I think if anything, it really put me on a path and with a mindset starting right out of the gate to be very resilient and very determined and to keep troubleshooting and trying new things and just kind of working through those challenges.
I love that. I mean, and who better than yourself to rely on, to push, to educate people on, to introduce your product to people other than you, because you're the one that's passionate about it and loves it. So relying on tax stores might have been the handy thing or the easy thing, but I mean, you mentioned a few good words in there, like resilient, and you know, timing is everything. So obviously you were able to handle this challenge.
For sure. Yeah. I've come out on the other side of it, and more or less we've all survived. So yeah.
Awesome. It's good. Okay. All right. So let's take it back a bit. You grew up in Quebec near Bromont and began riding at the age of 7. Your first horse was a thoroughbred named Zeppelin, who traveled with you to Ontario in 2011 when you attended the University of Waterloo. During this time, you and Zeppelin started training with Carly Campbell Cooper at her then barn, Triple C Stables. So you've had a wide variety. You are a horsewoman. You started in the trenches of, you know, riding ponies and doing all that kind of stuff, and it's evolved for you.
Definitely. Yeah.
So you know what horse owners want in their products.
For sure. And I mean, prior to moving to Ontario for university, you know, kind of very humble beginning, started riding ponies at my family friend's farm in the summer. Having an indoor arena accessible growing up was like, you know, that would have been a major luxury. So didn't start riding or having access to a stable that had an indoor arena until I was about 13, 14. It was a 30, 40 minute drive away from where we lived. So luckily I had very kind, thoughtful parents that took the time to drive me 4 or 5 days a week to ride. And being very hands-on as well, not having access to kind of fancier show barns, having to kind of work through everything myself. My parents were very involved, my dad especially. So yes, by the time that I got to university and I had the opportunity, which I'm very grateful for, to finally have, you know, high-level coaches and trainers, have access to quality stables, I had already kind of had the experience of doing a lot of things hands-on. And I think that paired with then the opportunity to see, you know, what are clients and riders and trainers at show barns looking for in equestrian products? What are some of the pain points? What are some of the things that aren't working out, such as horse blankets, in my opinion? Yeah. You know, and being able to kind of see the industry from a little bit more of a fuller perspective, both as kind of the client, the student, and then also from, you know, growing up and having to do a lot of it myself and do all the grooming and the mucking and the care and everything.
Yeah, you got every angle of it, that's for sure. So given that you are a horse person at heart and you are also a solid example of an entrepreneur, I am thrilled to have you here, because based on some of the conversations we've had, I think we are kind of cut from the same cloth. We've had some...
Yes, we've had some good chats about this, Tracy.
Yes, sure. We have. All right, so one of our similarities is that we both come from entrepreneurial families. Given your family's entrepreneurial spirit, did you get any particular advice from any of them that helped you make that huge leap and commitment to start up Anatomic?
For sure. That's a great question. And you provided Tracy the questions ahead of time. So I did have a good think on this one. And I don't remember any particular piece of advice, but growing up, it was always just a theme to do what you love. Work hard, don't settle for a job that you don't enjoy or that you don't find fulfilling. Because at the end of the day, I forget what the stat is, but you spend more time working, I think, in your life, along with sleeping, than you do, you know, putting time towards anything else. So for me, it was always a theme growing up, kind of do what you love and then you'll have a fulfilling life. You'll be happy. And that'll be a lot more obviously enjoyable for you than kind of just having to commit to a job or a career that doesn't fulfill you. Those are lots of hours spent doing unfulfilling work, which I think is not something that anyone ideally would want to have happen in their lives, right? That's fair to say. Yeah. So I think growing up, it was more just a theme of, well, of course you can have your own business if you want to, if you are willing to put in the hard work, it can happen and there's no reason why it wouldn't. So that was just kind of the theme growing up for me, which very much I think normalized starting my own business, right? It mm-hmm. wasn't like a big deal or anything out of the ordinary.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it was like your parents weren't surprised at all. Your family was not surprised when you took on this big venture.
No, exactly. If anything, I think they were probably maybe a tad relieved. They were probably thinking, oh good, hopefully this will be it. And she'll stick to this and this will be her calling and her thing, right? She won't kind of keep questioning what she wants to do. Because of course, prior to starting Anatomic, I will admit I was a little bit of a job hopper. Or whatever the term is. So I kind of had trouble sinking my teeth into anything concrete.
Yeah, I could not imagine. And I've worked for somebody else, whether it be, you know, a clothing chain or whether it be, you know, all that kind of stuff. And even working in other barns, it's still wasn't my vision, right? So yeah. I could not, and we will touch on this, I'm sure, but as some of the stresses that come along with being self-employed, being an entrepreneur, and anybody else listening to this will doing the same position will agree, there are a few stressful points, but when it's your own vision and it's something you love and you get excited about it every day, even those little challenging points that kind of go whoa, like kind of make you a little nervous, they're also exciting because you know that you will find what it takes to get over that hurdle.
Yep, totally. I couldn't have said that better myself.
Awesome. Okay. So you, like a lot of people, like you did state, you started out in the world of employment, working for someone else, doing that 9-to-5 treadmill and quickly feeling unfulfilled. You knew you wanted to be your own boss. You were working towards a passion and a purpose. What was the feeling you experienced when you finally traded cubicle life for entrepreneurial life?
So, not going to lie, terrifying, right? Because, but I think a lot of people can relate to that because, you know, when you make that leap, it's all on you, right? There's nobody, I mean, depending on the situation, of course, you can have support from family and friends, business partners, colleagues, but at the end of the day, it's all on you and you've essentially sacrificed your career, kind of on paper, at least, right? Like job applications, a resume. In my experience, unfortunately, it doesn't always come across in a positive light if it shows on your resume that you know, all of a sudden, you know, broke through the status quo a little bit and kind of did your own thing and started your own business. And then of course, if it fails and it's not successful, which that does happen for a lot of small business owners, then, you know, having to then go backwards and kind of rely back on your education, your previous work experiences, explaining all of that in an interview, that all ran through my mind. So to be honest, it was a very terrifying decision, but it was also at the same time, very exhilarating and very like, exciting, because in my gut, I was like, okay, I'm going to make this work because I feel like I have to, I want to have that life where I'm doing something that I love. So if I fail, well, job prospects aren't looking good, Taylor. So you better, you know, figure this out and really work at it. So,
yeah, I mean, and you and I first met, I think it was around 2018 when I massaged that one mare of yours, Paris, and you and I were kind of chit-chatting about how you had some, like, I think it was probably the blanket in the making and you were working on different versions of it and stuff. So, I mean, that is very cool. So when I saw that you were coming out with Anatomic, I'm like, oh my God, she did it. Not that I ever doubted you because I know that you were
it's still a big deal because I know, you know, and it's not to say that I have some magic recipe, but, you know, it is a big deal because I know of quite a few people that have those ideas and they kind of start working on it, you know, and then understandably, like, it makes total sense. You know, life gets in the way, your job that pays the bills gets more and more demanding. It's not always something that's kind of welcomed or normalized in our culture sometimes, but I am very proud of myself to have made it happen for sure.
Yeah. And you should be, sister. I think you're doing awesome. And I know too, as far as doing this, like I shared back, I had Matt, my husband, on a podcast a few episodes back. It was called Love, Horse Poop and Podcasts because Matt is my podcast editor, and he has a big help in, like, you know, producing these for me. And he's just wonderful. And one of the stories we shared was our development of Stone Path, and how, you know, he's a bit more of the reserve type. And here I am coming out blazing with, you know, waving the business plan and in the air going like, this is, we can do this. We got this. And I'm like full steam ahead. And I see that we can totally do this. And he's a bit more reserved, wanting to see more of a plan, being a little bit more leery of things. I mean, we got through it. We're fine. We're doing awesome. Stone Path's great. I don't know, like 5 years later. So can you share with us the support of your fiance and how this has been really prevalent in your life?
For sure. Zach, my fiance, we will be together 5 years in January. So he met me when I was, you know, just kind of had Anatomic as a back burner idea. I didn't have samples yet. I hadn't started any of that. I was working a 9-to-5 job. And you're reminding me a lot, Tracy, as you describe your relationship with your husband, because it is very similar. I'm very much like the risk taker. Wing it, it'll all work out, believe and achieve, which we're going to touch on later. Yeah. And he, you know, he has a very good steady job. He's not entrepreneurial. And that's something kind of out of the get-go that we knew about each other. I always said, I want to have my own business. He's much more kind of even Steven, kind of not as much of a risk taker, likes to plan ahead, likes to know what's coming ahead. So definitely being that different, we do in some ways like clash that way. And he's very supportive of the business, but he's not directly involved in terms of doing any work for the business. So it really is all me. So he's kind of, you know, he'll help out with photography here and there. I'll bounce ideas off of him, but it is very much kind of my thing. And he's just kind of there, you know, on the sidelines, you know, cheering, and that's totally. So for sure, I think if he had been involved with the business, with Anatomic from the beginning, it probably wouldn't have been a good partnership, because it would have been just a little too much resistance. And as well, he's not a horse person, so he doesn't have that passion behind it. He's big into lacrosse and golf and those other sports. So he can definitely relate, but it's not his kind of passion cup of tea, business.
That's great. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's for nothing. Sure. Yeah. I mean, Matt's got that kind of curiosity, type of personality. And, you know, so he's very curious about stuff. So he's learned about the horse world, and being a journalist and a reporter, he has that, you know, ability to ask questions, to learn more. So I'm very grateful for that, to have him around with that. But you're right. I mean, you know, even with my life coaching, he's supportive, but he likes to stay in the background other than the podcast that we did together, the episode. But yeah, their support is so important.
For sure. Yeah. Zach is very much like the, I'll take care of the horses, I'll cook supper, I'll keep down the fort, and you know, go to the horse show and focus on the business. So that for me is a big help, because we do have horses at home on our property. Anyone listening that has horses at home, right, it's a constant responsibility, and it's time consuming. So yeah, definitely appreciative of his help with that for sure.
Good. Yeah. All right, Taylor, can you talk about some of the challenges you experienced while developing the Fit blanket, and how you adapted your thinking to deal with them and find a way to move around them?
For sure. That's a great question. So what I initially immediately thought of when I read this question ahead of time, Tracy, was how I had it so set in my mind when I started developing the Fit blanket that it couldn't be a pullover. So it had to be the traditional with the buckles. And one of the main reasons why we ended up, or I ended up doing six different designs for the Fit blanket, was because I was so set initially on, no one's going to want a pullover blanket. You know, that's too unconventional. It has to be, you know, there's already so much about this blanket that's so different and innovative and kind of just so different than anything else on the market. I have to have some similarities, some tradition there with kind of the typical, what everyone's used to, you know, you have the clips in the front and you're good to go. So I think we did about, I did about four versions of different clip buckle orientation. So we had an X shape going on. I had the traditional Teucer single clasps. I even started thinking about doing a zipper at one point.
Oh, wow.
Which is still in my mind for other blanket designs anyway. Huh. But my pattern maker that I was working with, who, you know, wasn't a horse person, but just knew the construction, knew the sewing, the design, how to put, how to take my vision and actually create it, because I don't have any sewing experience. He just said to me one day, he said, well, why don't you just put it over the horse's head like a turtleneck, you know? And I just kind of looked at him and I was like, oh no, like no one's going to want that. Like it has to have buckles. Every horse blanket I know has buckles in the front. And then he's like, you would be able to achieve so much more, your vision of fit and the strategic placement of the seams and the panel design, if you just had it be a pullover. Because essentially what was making the buckles in the front not work was because the fabric has four-way stretch.
Right.
So without getting too deep into like the physics and the biomechanics of it, and I don't even fully understand it, but essentially in all of our testing, it just wasn't working with having front buckles. The blanket would shift around too much. It would slip back too much.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so going back to your initial question, that was a big challenge. And that experience of someone that's not even horsey, just looking at me kind of like, hello, and saying, why don't you just take out the buckles and put it over the horse's head? That was really the beginning for me of realizing, okay, I'm wanting to, and I have ideas to design products that are so different than anything else on the market. So that's a good thing. And I need to completely change my thinking and take away this mold of conventionalism that, you know, we see in other products that are all very similar to each other in the industry. I need to take away that mold because I'm trying to fit my wild and crazy, innovative, totally different ideas into this conventional mold. And I need to completely get rid of that and think bigger and not be looking at what else is out there. In terms of, in this case, horse blankets, right? And trying to make mine be similar, but, you know, better because of A, B, C, D. Like, no, throw that out the window. So now when I look, like, we have some new products coming down the pipeline in the next year to 18 months. So I'm just designing them now and I'm just testing them. I'm not kind of looking around at what else other brands are coming out with, because I'm realizing that I essentially don't need to. And if anything, that hinders my creativity and my ability to truly make equestrian products that are going to be better and new and offer horses and their riders something completely different, which essentially is the whole purpose of Anatomic, right? Is to really offer people a different option.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Okay. This is awesome. I am so excited for you. I was just, yeah, this is so cool. And you know what? How many times are, like, let's just pose this question of possibility that, you know, I mean, this kind of can lead into some of the questions we're going to talk about a little bit earlier, but good old ego could have stepped in and said, this is not the way I want it. I want it this way. And this guy doesn't even know horses. And he's telling me how to do my vision. You had the wherewithal to step back and go, okay, right? Like, entrepreneurialism is all about, like, taking your vision and going forward and getting through all these tough times. But it's also about stepping back and being aware of yourself and what's going on between your ears and what you could ultimately self-sabotage, right? So that was awesome. You were able to learn in that moment. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in many ways you could say that I'm a solo entrepreneur, right? Because going back to our previous question, I don't have anyone else currently that's really, like, I have a virtual assistant just recently, which is amazing, but I'm really the only one that's doing, you know, all of the creative development and the growth strategy of the business, everything from A to Z. And I think I have the vision for the brand, but I don't have all the answers, obviously, right? So I think it's a really key point. You need to be able to know when to, and I mean, it's never a perfect you know, you're never, you know, you can make mistakes in this, of course, that's life and that's having a business, but knowing when to go with your gut and say, no, I think that I have the right idea. I'm going to, you know, I hear this person's suggestion, but I'm not going to go with it. And then also knowing when to say, okay, I was definitely wrong on this. And I can see how this person's contribution can really help accelerate and move forward the overall vision. So yeah, being able to kind of be specific on, you know, looking at your decisions, but then also having more of kind of like a fuller picture look at kind of where you want the business to go and what's going to help you get there and who can help you with that, because you're never going to have all the skills necessary, right? You can't be, you know, talented and good at everything.
Oh, right. And being a solopreneur, it is about realizing that you don't have all the skills. So not only do you have to work on your product and all of that, but you have to work on the skills. So it's forever learning curve. It can be a little exhausting, but.
Yes. The whole definition of wearing multiple hats kind of gets expanded tenfold someday. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So just a little bit then more about the Fit Blanket. Just share with the listeners how amazing this product is. Please, because it's awesome.
For sure. So I think to explain how awesome the Fit Blanket is, you also have to understand why it was developed. So in a nutshell, anyone listening that blankets their horses, we've all experienced this. Some blankets on the market can fit your horse better than others. The ones that typically don't fit well cause mane rubs, shoulder rubs, they slip, they shift, they're difficult to wash, they don't breathe, they're not versatile enough, where you maybe only use them 2 months a year, and then, you know, they're in storage the rest of the year. So as a lifelong kind of horse owner, rider, being around horses my whole life, I wanted to create a better solution, not just for the horse in terms of comfort, but also for the horse owner, the rider, the groom, the person that's, you know, the user, the one that's putting the blankets on and all of that. So the Fit Blanket is a 3-in-1. So it's a cooler, stable sheet and a blanket liner. So depending on your climate and where you live, you can essentially use it 3 seasons out of the year. It's a 50 gram equivalent, but what's really neat about the fabric of the Fit Blanket is that it's breathable and moisture wicking. It also has 4-way stretch and has a paneled design that actually mimics human sportswear. So it's really designed to be comfortable for your horse. And because it's anatomically designed to fit your horse and their shape properly, and also the 4-way stretch of the fabric allows, like encourages that as well, you're not getting the issues that you traditionally have with other blankets that are kind of restrictive and don't stretch and don't always fit the horse's shape properly. And it's because of that poor fit that you get issues like mane rubs, shoulder rubs, slips, shifting. Yeah. The other great thing as well, because I wanted, like I said, for the Fit Blanket to be convenient for the horse owner, it's machine washable, it's quick dry, it's also dirt and hair repellent. So that's just a fancy way of saying that I sourced a material that doesn't kind of hold onto hair and dirt. So when you wash the Fit Blanket, it easily expels all that hair and dirt in the washing machine. Unlike fleece, for example, you're not going to get all the gunked up hair stuck in there. And you're, you know, you're using a shedding blade to try and get it off, like I've seen some people do. So it, yeah, it's really meant to simplify your life as a busy equestrian, give you one blanket that you can use almost year round, depending again on your climate. And that just gives your horse, you know, some lightweight warmth and is also comfortable for them. So you're not having, and I'm sure Tracy, you can speak to this as well. You're not having pressure points on muscles. You're not having that all too common, you know, dip at the top of their neck, just above the wither where the blankets sit and cause pressure all winter. You know, it's really meant to just be like a comfortable base layer pair of leggings for your horse.
Yeah. No, when I got my hands on your blanket for the first time and you were sharing all of the info about it, and you do that very well too, by the way. Yeah, I was really impressed. And absolutely, out of all the years I've been massaging, and it kind of took me back to your answer about, you know, trying to be traditional of what riders expect. And I'm like, the traditional ones are so hard to fit. And I mean, I just massaged a horse the other day who's missing half of his withers, because the rub was so bad years before this owner had him, that it's left him scarred. And it's just unbelievable. And like some people, you know, I've had, you know, where they're so measured to the nth degree that it's restrictive for them. Like there's no movement. And as cozy as fleece is, I do not understand why you would want that on your horse.
I know. I know. That's a material that I never wish to incorporate into any anatomic products, because it's also the whole idea of it being kind of moisture wicking and really breathable. I don't know. Personally, in my experience, I've never witnessed that. I've witnessed that with wool. I think wool is a great alternative if you're looking for a cooler or something that's really going to breathe, yes, right? But these polyester-based synthetic fleece materials that are coming out now in horse blankets, I don't know. Personal opinion, I just can't see how they're really breathable and really moisture wicking.
Right.
With how it's constructed. But anyway.
Wow. Okay. All right. So how did your experiences as an equestrian athlete help you to manifest your business vision?
Great question. I love your questions, Tracy. no, I really do. They're very good.
Awesome.
So this is a really good one. And I think anyone listening that's been involved in horses, even if you don't ride, there are themes and that go along with horsemanship and having a horse and being involved with horses. So you have to think about someone other than yourself. You have to think about short-term goals. You have to think about a long-term vision. So for example, if you're competing, you know, what are my goals at this show? What are my goals this season? What are my goals for next season, you know, for me and my horse, or even just for my own riding? So all of these themes, responsibility, dedication, having to show up every day, in the case of having a horse, if you're the one taking care of said horse, they need to be fed every day, exercised. We all know, everyone listening, the care involved. So I think that those experiences, you know, especially with riding, goal setting, dealing with challenges, with setbacks, things out of your control, all of those themes to having a business. So I just think it kind of goes hand in hand. And I think it's not just being an equestrian athlete. I think you could argue it's being an athlete in general. Anyone that takes their sport seriously can probably relate and see how that's connected to creating a business vision, because a lot of the ingredients that you need to, I think, be a successful athlete, you can also argue those are the same ingredients to be a successful at business, right? Being able to, you know, get back up after a challenging day, deal with setbacks, with injuries. You could relate an injury for an athlete to, you know, a setback with your business, a delay in getting a supply, you know, in my case, a delay with getting the material I need to make a product, right? There's a lot of similarities there. But I also think being an equestrian athlete specifically, there's a whole nother aspect there that other athletes don't get to experience, which is the connection with the animal, the bond, the responsibility of, it's not like a tennis racket that you can just put in your closet and you don't have to think about it or touch it or take care of it for the next 6 months if you don't want to, right? Horses are very different. It also becomes kind of like a lifestyle. And I think the love and the commitment and the emotion that you also put into your horses ends up being very similar in some ways when you become an entrepreneur. You kind of start to take care of your business kind of like it's your baby or it's, you know, your pet. It's, you know, something that you're also nurturing. So anyway, I think there's the two sides to it. There's kind of the very objective side, you know, you have to have that determination, deal with challenges, set short-term and long-term goals for yourself. But then I also think there's the side of, you know, kind of end up treating your business sometimes like a prized show jumper, you know,
yes.
You gotta make sure you're giving it everything that it needs. And so forth. So,
Okay. I love that. There's so much running through my mind right now. And I just, I hope I don't lose it. There was something that you said. Okay. So we all know horse people will do most horse people, let's say 99% of the good ones, they will do whatever it takes. They will buy whatever their horse needs. They will, you know, all of this kind of stuff. So that dedication and that responsibility and that, you know, get up at 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. or whatever it needs to be. Okay. That's for the love of the horse. Now, when you are a solopreneur and it's freezing cold in the morning and you've got to get your butt out of bed because you know you've got to do this and that, and it requires, you know, that not willpower, but that motivation, that self-direction, right? Oh, that is challenging. And I think, like, can you touch on that for us a little bit? So yes, yeah, your business is still your baby and yes, you love it, but there's got to be those days where Taylor has had to push herself a little harder.
For sure. And I think relating back to your original question, I think it's, you know, you like, I've done all the hunters where you got to get up at 4 a.m. and you got to get there. And in some cases, you know, at the lower levels, you're braiding yourself and you're there for the whole day. And of course, you know, for the most part, when you wake up at 4:30 a.m. to go to a horse show, of course you want to go, but I think a lot of people can relate to that first, you know, few seconds when the alarm goes off and it's like, oh, what I would do to just stay in bed and not have to get up right now, right? Especially when it's dark out and in the winter, especially. I think you just have to have that discipline and you have to just know that it's kind of short-term pain for long-term gain. And you have to find what motivates you as well. So personally, what motivates me is I love what I do. Like, I find my work with Anatomic very fulfilling. I love designing equestrian products. If I could just do what I wanted to do all day and not have to do all the other things with the business, I would just sit in a room and just design equestrian products all day, right? And I think I also, you know, realize this is a good opportunity for me. It's kind of now or never. So I think you need to just have that kind of grit to just push through. And I think for everyone, it's different. But I think equestrian athletes have to be gritty too. So I think my background personally, having already gone through that, you kind of learn to push through those hard days, you know, like you get to the horse show and it's pouring rain. Like you gotta push through and you gotta be there for your horse and you gotta show up. So I just think all those themes really translate over between business and riding.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a lot of the issues that I help clients with the life coaching, is setting up their ability to find that momentum, to set up their daily schedules where they have that success day to day. And, you know, they have those coping mechanisms or the skills necessary to deal with those hurdles. So yeah, sure. It's completely
finding, like with riding and I think training horses, it's the same for business. You have to find that consistency.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I've found kind of what motivates me and what works for me. And some mornings it's really just as simple as like, well, Taylor, if you're not doing this, what kind of job are you going to have? It'll be a job that you don't like. So get up and go do things that you need to do, right? That's my kind of weird, you know, that's my motivation. And I can't speak for others. Everyone, I think, has to find their own thing that they say to themselves during hard times to really.
Yeah. But I have this funny little story. It was years ago when I first started massaging and it was a very cold February morning. And it was my first horse was 3 hours away. So that was my grit. And yeah. My alarm went off at like 4:30 or 5. And I'm like, oh man, oh, it's so yucky out there. Maybe I'll call the client. I'll just put them into a schedule somewhere else and I'll just go back to bed. Like 5 seconds later, I'm like, oh my God, I'm self-employed. I can't throw the blanket off, get up and get on the road on a snowy February morning. And I always relive that every once in a while. That was kind of like my huge aha moments. Like, way to go, Mitchell.
For sure. And I think you could even then take that a step further and think at the end of that day, how did you feel? I know I often reflect on that if I have a day where I'm tired or unmotivated, which like that happens to everyone, right? Like for sure there's days where I'm unmotivated and the challenges have been piling up. And, you know, especially right now with COVID, there's major supply issues and delays with all those things in every industry and sector right now.
Yeah.
But I always try to remember then, okay, so at the end of the day, if it's like 7-8 o'clock, you know, and I'm sitting on the couch and I've had my successful day, I have my dogs beside me, have a glass of wine, I'll think, oh, I'm not tired now. Like, I feel good. I had a good day. Like, I got stuff done. Yeah. And then I think, oh, but think how crappy you felt this morning, Taylor. Well, obviously it was worth getting up and doing it, right? So
awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. All right. So one of the things that we have in common, which is a very common thread amongst entrepreneurs, I say, is our way of thinking and the way we view every experience, like we just kind of touched on, that we have in our business. And this is where knowing oneself is really key to being a successful entrepreneur. And this is where you and I really connected in our conversations about this. And you shared with me that you have a mantra. And for anybody that doesn't know what a mantra is, it can be a saying of any number of words. It can be as short and sweet as, you know, something I like to say to myself, you know, let this happen beautifully and easily, you know, like, so if I'm in a tricky situation, I'll just sort of put that out there. And it just kind of helps to guide me, ground me. What is your mantra that has helped you get through some of the tougher times?
For sure. So my, I guess, mantra, I never really thought of it as such until we kind of started speaking more, Tracy. And I'm not even really sure how it came to be. It just started to become something that I kept, like you said, that you kind of keep referring back to mentally in times of challenge. So my mantra is believe and achieve. And it's kind of just a quicker way of saying that your mind to. And those are kind of sayings that we hear a lot, right? That are pretty common. But yeah, for me, it's just become believe and achieve. And it's really, for me, it's what I believe, which is that if you believe in what you are doing, and you believe that the work you're putting in now will give you the end goal or the end result that you're wanting, then it will happen. Right. So we kind of chatted about this in more depth when we saw each other at Angel Stone this past summer.
Yeah,
it's really just having that positive mindset and kind of believing that if you believe that, this, you know, thing that you want. So in my case, of course, it's, you know, the business, right? Being able to grow the business, grow the brand, being able to accomplish what I wish to accomplish with the brand and see it grow. So if I believe in it and I have that positive energy surrounding that thought and that belief, then I will essentially be able to manifest that into reality, into the reality that I wish to create. Yeah. So you can, of course, then go deeper and say, you know, oh, you can create your own reality, which I think to an extent is definitely true. But yeah, it's just something that kind of reminds me, like, hey, believe and achieve, like, just keep believing it'll happen, you'll find a solution, and then you'll achieve what you're setting out to do. And it can be as big and as vast and broad as, you know, achieving with the business and with life, with personal goals, or it can be as simple as like a challenge, you know, that I'm encountering today with a supply issue, let's say, right? Or with some sort of challenge in the office. It's like, well, believe that there will be a solution. Mm-hmm. Obviously this one challenge is not the end of Anatomic. It's not the end of all of your entrepreneurial ambitions, right? It's one challenge. So believe that you'll find a solution. That solution might come to you in 5 minutes. It might come in 5 days, but it'll come, and then you'll be able to work through that.
Yeah. So for someone who might not be used to that way of thinking, right? What is the key to, I mean, they can come up with their own mantra, whether they're, so if we're talking, if riders are listening right now and they're like, this sounds kind of interesting. Maybe I'll find myself a mantra to get me through some of my harder lesson days or something, or my horse isn't quite quote unquote behaving themselves. You know, like there's a lot of relationship issues between horses and riders as well, right? So what is the key to making believe and achieve work for them if they wanted to borrow Taylor's mantra?
Yeah. So again, that's like the question, isn't it? Right. And I think for you, Tracy, with your life coaching, you can probably have more insight than I likely have. For me, I just kind of know what, but I think everyone's different. And I think you need to find that mantra or that saying that puts you back into a mindset where you're best equipped to deal with challenges, right? So for me, believe and achieve is like, you can do anything, Taylor, like suck it up. You're going to believe that this can happen and it's going to happen. You've come this far, like, let's go. So that's kind of the emotion behind believe and achieve for me.
Yeah.
But that type of kind of maybe more assertive thinking might not work for someone else that has a different personality, right? Yeah. They might need something more comforting or more reassuring that's going to give them kind of the motivation that they need to keep pushing through.
Yeah.
So I think you have to kind of find that saying or that thought or that idea that like resonates with you and is going to become something that no matter what mood you're in, no matter how you're feeling on any given day, it's still going to resonate kind of to your core kind of belief and your core desire for what you want out of life and who you are.
Yeah. And along that, you know, comes a mindset, right? So you generally adopt a mindset, and the more you practice that, the easier it becomes. So I know in times for me during challenging times, or if I feel like the world keeps tossing a bunch of crap at me and I'm like, oh my Lord. So, you know, when I find my mind going to underwhelmed or overwhelmed places where I'm constantly kind of feeling down, I'm like, all right, Trace, what you focus on grows. So focus on what you want, where you need to be. And again, a lot of that self-talk is, all right, let's go, Mitchell. You know, you've got to talk yourself up. And I know one of the mantras that coaching clients has come up with, we talked about this at a point in time in her show season this year, which was a big moment for her. She came up with the mantra of, I thrive under pressure. And I'm like, that's awesome.
That's really good.
I mean, good for her. And she did, but it was reassuring herself because we were kind of talking through this process. Like, let's go back to when you've had that success. What was it like? What was running through your mind and stuff? And she's like, well, I find I really thrive under pressure. And like, well, there you go. So when you're feeling the pressure, give yourself that boost.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. That's really good.
She's awesome too. She had a really good year. So I'm very proud of her.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Positive thinking.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, Taylor, I've got a couple of last questions here for you. What is your big goal vision for Anatomic? Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is, what is Taylor Stafford's big goal as you move through life?
For sure. Okay. So big goal for Anatomic. I think that it's okay to have multiple goals. You can kind of have a lofty, overarching, like best case scenario, perfect, like dream goal, right? And it might not be completely realistic, but again, it depends on your personality. It can still be something that motivates you and kind of makes you think, oh, you know, wow, what if, like, this would be incredible. So I have two goals. I have the goal that I had when I first started Anatomic, which hasn't changed, which is to kind of have Anatomic be a very strong Canadian brand with presence in Canada and the US. I want to have the brand be primarily direct to consumer online with a few select independent tack stores that are really on board, that are really excited about Anatomic products and want to share them and promote them with their customer base. And I would rather be, you know, kind of in a few places and have a smaller but really loyal customer base than kind of just spew Anatomic products to every tack store and kind of have it be everywhere and not be kind of as special. So I kind of have the goal of that and maybe having in the future one or two employees, keeping the brand very small, focusing on the product development and just kind of fulfilling my true desire of, you know, I'm going to make really high quality, really incredible equestrian products that I really believe in. And I'm going to do my best to hope that people like them too. And that's going to be it. That's going to be, you know, I'll be happy at the end of the day if I have a nice collection of, you know, say 15 products in the lineup eventually, and the feedback's great, and I have a small but loyal customer base, and the brand's successful. that way in North America in its own right. Okay.
Yep.
But then for those that know me maybe a little bit more personally, then I have the crazy, you know, and by saying crazy, I don't mean bad, but just more the lofty, like crazy best case scenario. Imagine if, right?
Yeah.
And so that's again kind of what helps to motivate me in certain times of challenge and whatnot. And of course, you can relay this back to, well, believe and achieve. Maybe if I believe it enough, it'll happen. So that's for Anatomic to be an international brand, to have reps or distributors in Europe, the UK, Australia, Asia, and basically be a huge international successful brand, with, you know, maybe an office of like 10, 15 employees. Of our products made in Canada, which is very important to me, but also, you know, just have an apparel line and have it be like right up there with some of the top leading brands internationally that come out of Europe, right? Yeah. Because I think overall there's a lot of innovation that comes out of Europe, both for equestrian apparel and equipment, tack, saddles. So why can't a Canadian brand do that, right? Why can't we be up there with those big European brands, be competing with them and have a really, you know, big, big brand that's still, you know, true to our roots and still Canadian and high quality and innovative, but be like right up there. So those are the two goals. And I, depending on the day, like one day I might be, no, Taylor, like that's not realistic. It's just going to be you and like two sewers working out of your garage, and you're going to outsource some of the production to some of your Canadian manufacturers, and you're going to have your website, a couple tack stores, and that's going to be good, right? And then there's other days where I'll get like a really big order, or I'll get a new tack store on board, or I'll get some really good feedback, or it'll be an easy day where I get a lot done, and I'll be like, oh, sky's the limit, like we're just gonna eat, you know. So I think for me, it all depends on what works for you and your personality and what your ambitions and goals are, but for me, I toggle between those two goals. And then going to the personal side of things, we kind of touched on this a little bit before we started recording, Tracy. So this was actually really interesting. I had this conversation with my dad actually just yesterday. Because I was saying kind of what I just said to you, which is like, oh, you know, like the next 2 years, I really want to focus on the business and I want to just like go big or go home. Have a five-year plan and really see where this brand can go. And he said, okay, like that's fair, but like keep in mind that when you retire or you sell the business, or things, you know, that you can't predict change in whatever way, you know, things happen, you still have to know who you are at the end of it. You still have to know who's Taylor, what are your personal goals, what makes you tick personally, like outside of your career and your business, and still, you know, prioritize family and like your personal hobbies. And so in my case, that would be like riding, right? I still really enjoy riding. And so finding time for that and staying connected to that part of yourself while you're still building this brand is very important because, and again, this was him speaking from direct experience as well. You have your circle of kind of, you know, friends or contacts, colleagues, business partners that you surround yourself with all the time, you know, in his case, like 25, 30, 35 years. And then you sell the business fire and, well, you don't have contact with those people anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So now he's making more of an effort now to get back in touch with friends from university, and to do more hobbies and things, but he struggled with that. So Anyway, I thought that was a very good piece of advice, because I very much have the personality to kind of go all in and really fixate and just focus on the business.
Yep.
So that was a really good reminder. So I think personal goals for me would be to keep riding, and to keep working on my riding. I've always really enjoyed that, just the improvement aspect. And having a horse, which I'm very fortunate to still be able to do. We have a little 4-acre farm here, so I can still ride and have a horse. And also just make sure to keep prioritizing time for family and friends, especially friends that I've had since high school, right? That you kind of can easily lose touch with, but then you kind of get back in touch and you start talking and it's like no time's passed and
So, no, that advice from your dad is awesome. And how timely is that you guys had that? Because this was an unexpected question for you. So it's kind of like, hey, Taylor, what do you think of this? And I mean, being from an entrepreneurial family myself, and people listening to previous podcasts who know a bit about my story, my dad, as successful as he was, he never looked after himself as the entrepreneur. So I got the other side of it. So I kind of learned what not to do. Rest me, God bless his soul. So yeah, that was one of the more challenging things for me. But I also shared with you that, I don't know, probably 6-7 years into massaging, I finally had that aha moment of, oh my God, I'm not Mitchell Equine Massage. I am not who I am because of who I massage for, or, you know. So it was a really like, holy crap. Yeah. I've got to get myself out of this, to the extent, like you said, like fixation of we're going to make this happen. And what rider can I get on next as a client? And it's really all consuming. And if you don't take that time to have that inner reflection and those conversations with yourself about what it is you want and what's important to you outside of what your business is, I think it can be a real trap. And then unfortunately, the passion and the vision doesn't go anywhere.
For sure. Yeah, exactly. So you can't be, you can't be kind of running and growing a business if you're not taking time on the side for personal growth and rest. And can't pour from a half empty cup or in a cup, where there's that expression I see a lot. But yeah, definitely. And become more of a theme that I see a lot more people talking about, entrepreneurial or not. I think especially with the pandemic, with people working from home, it's easy to get those lines blurred between, you know, your work and then your personal growth, your personal time and ambitions. So you can't solely define yourself by your job, your career, your business. So definitely.
Exactly.
Definitely a good reminder. And I think every entrepreneur at some point will struggle with that. I just think it's part of the game, right? Because having your own business, especially being a small business owner, it requires so much time and energy and commitment and consistency that it's definitely easy to become all consumed.
Wow. Well, my friend, this has been awesome. I think you gave me a couple of good ideas prior to pressing record. So I think we might look into that. But I would love to have you back almost as like the entrepreneurial consultant of just people to learn from you. You're so inspiring. I am so happy for you.
Thank you, Tracy.
You've done a wonderful job. And anytime I get a chance to sit down and have these sort of mutually serving conversations, because I know you help me a lot. And it's nice to connect with other people who are in the same boat. And
totally.
Right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
All right. Well, I will have all of your connect information. Where do you most likely, you said you like Instagram a lot. Is that where you connect with most people?
Yep. I'm pretty good at responding to anyone's messages. I stay on top of that quite well. So yeah, Instagram's always a good place. We have a Facebook account as well. And then we also have an email address for the business that's really easy. It's anatomic. So anatomeq@gmail.com. So you can always shoot me an email that way. There's also a contact page on our website, anatomic.com, that also goes directly into my inbox. So,
And your website's lovely. So that's, that's great. So people should check it out. All right. Well, thank you, Taylor. This has been amazing.
Thank you, Tracy. I'm so glad we got to make this happen.
So there you have it. I have some great interviews lined up for future episodes, and we'll be covering some pretty interesting topics, as always, with the intent to open and engage the horse world on a wide variety of issues. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. To stay current with Hitting Your Stride, subscribe on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. If you like what you've heard here today, make sure you share and leave a comment to help guide future episodes and widen the audience. And be sure to check out social media to keep up to date with Equestrian Elements Life Coaching.